Hello everyone, my name is Kate Cooper. I'm Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute of Leadership and Management. Welcome to this podcast, which is the fifth in our series of five podcasts focusing on how you can get better at working at home. The Institute of Leadership and Management recognises leadership has been multidimensional. We identify five dimensions of leadership: authenticity, vision, achievement, ownership and collaboration. We've broken those five dimensions down into 49 components, which enable us to organise our content on our website, but also help individuals access the leadership support that is immediately relevant to them. The components I'll be talking about in this podcast is team working, one of the components of the dimension of collaboration, because we all know how vital great teamwork is to successful organisations. I'll be talking about different models, different ways that we understand teams, and then paying particular attention to leading teams when you're not in the same geographical location as your team members. One way of understanding modern teams is to look at the work of Meredith Belbin. He identified 8 and then 9 team roles that he said have to be performed in order for a team to be effective. So putting together the cleverest people or the most driven people or the most amiable people. If you have too many of one thing, the team won't be effective. There are a number of roles, clusters of behaviour that have to be performed. Doesn't mean you need 9 people, but it does mean that you need these 9 things to be happening. Once you know what your preferred team role is, then you're able to best know how you contribute to a team, and you look at everybody's profile and you can see what the team needs, what the team's going to be particularly strong at, and what the team is lacking. Bruce Tuckman offered us a way of understanding teams in the 1960s, and this was really looking at how a group of people develop into a team that's able to perform effectively together. He identified the early stage that he called forming, and I think most of us are familiar with that. When you're in a new group of people, you have to get something done. Everybody's polite, rather formal, unsure about what they're supposed to be doing. And then they move into a phase, we know what we're supposed to be doing, and there are many different ways perhaps of doing it. And so you'll have competing perspectives as to what's the best way of moving forward. Tuckman called this stage storming, and I think most of us probably know teams that have got stuck at this storming stage. Once you've got through that, however, and you start to develop norms, the norming stage, this is expectations of what people do, what needs to be done, how it all fits together. And then you can move to performing, a team that does well together. Another way of understanding teams is the work of John Adair, Action-Centered Leadership, where he said, right, the 3 things we have to think about with the team itself, all the people that go into it and how they fit together, the task that needs to be done, what it is we're trying to achieve as a team, what is our purpose really for being together, and then the individual needs of all of those team members. If you start prioritising one over the other, things get lost. If you over-focus on the task, individuals don't come with you, the team doesn't work very well together. It's all about the individuals and how they're feeling and how they're contributing and enabling them to do only what suits them. Well, the task suffers. And you can see how having to get those 3 elements of task, team, individual in balance is an ongoing piece of work because it will keep shifting. In 1993, Katzenbach and Smith published work particularly focusing on high-performing teams. And one of their immediate assertions was that for a team to be really a team, there has to be a recognition, a mutual accountability for the work that it's doing. The team has to care about what it's supposed to be doing, and it has to recognise collectively that it's important to all of them, because the word team is so misused. How often do we hear someone come into a room and say, hi team, or we'll hear people say, we're all one team here. No, we're not. We're a group of people, maybe know each other very well, maybe work together very well, but a team has to have that mutual accountability. And then, rather like Tuckman, they plotted the journey, the life of a high-performing team, showing how it moves from being a collection of individuals to something that's much more successful. If you Google what makes a high-performing team, you'll get many lists. And in addition to those that have been identified by Katzenbach and Smith, you'll also find trust appearing quite frequently. And it was Google themselves that did some work in this area a few years ago, looking for what makes a great team, setting out perhaps with the same view that Belbin had, that it was about high-performing individuals and driven people. But no, they found that psychological safety was the greatest predictor of team success, where people were nice to each other, where they were kind to each other, and a high level of trust and tolerance for mistakes. But in this podcast, we want to particularly think about all these things that are going on in teams, and we can't see the people that we're working with. So where we would normally rely on all manner of visual cues to help us work with our team, to know when's a good time to approach somebody, to know when they need help, to know when they need to be left alone, and all the other things that we unconsciously pick up when we can see people. We've now got people working in different locations. We haven't got cameras on all the time. We can't pick up all those visual cues. And to make it even more difficult, people are sharing their workspace at home with other workers, with children, with dogs, although they do seem to be a particular hit on video conferencing. So much going on that we can't pick up on all of that. So how do we ensure our teams continue to work well together? We did some research a few years ago on remote working, and one of the things that immediately became obvious were people finding email was just overloading them. It was too easy to think that if you can't see somebody, you send them a letter. Of course you don't. You phone them up, you video conference them, because they are two-way communications. And sending somebody an email is a one-way communication. And if you get an email you don't understand, phone somebody up and ask them. Do not play email ping pong, and do not do that passive aggressive, "I'm sorry, I'm confused." You're not confused. The communication is, you're not necessarily confused. You don't understand. You don't like what's in the email. Don't escalate it. Speak to somebody, because the voice is such an important additional way of conveying what it is we really mean. People need different things from work. People need different things from their manager. We found in the research that micromanagement was a fear, not only from the managers, but also from the people being managed. But somebody's micromanagement is somebody else's great checking in. They're interested in what I'm doing in a positive way. It's only for you as a team leader to be able to really understand what's the new normal for the people in your team, picking up the cues that they're giving you about how quickly they respond, about how frequently they want to speak to you. Ask them how you can best support them, because at the moment people are struggling with new technology, new ways of working. And if we'd been expecting to do this a number of months ago, people would have had training on remote working. They would certainly have had training on using the technology. Think about WhatsApp that lots of us use, and how many of us are not even aware of all the features it has. Appoint specialists in your team so that they know that they're the go-to person for WhatsApp, for Zoom, for Google Hangouts, whatever it is that you decide to use to enable your team to work effectively. But going back to the Google research, the best thing you can do is to be kind, to create an environment where it's okay to make mistakes, because of course mistakes will be made, and to understand that we might have productivity losses now, but creating that environment where people trust each other, more inclined to ask for what they want, is actually, in the longer term, could well prove to be a really useful investment in our colleagues. Thanks for listening. Please do go on to the www.instituteLM.com website and download more resources that help you get better at working at home.